open. Good morning, everyone. We're going to start off today with Senate Bill 153, so I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 153. Chris Allenack will give us a quick overview on that. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 153 modifies the how taxable income is determined for corporations when one of the members of the affiliated group is an insurance company.
Can you give us the 10,000 foot perspective and why we're here and what we're doing?
I'm just catching up to speed on this one. I believe that currently...
you don't know why we're here? Is that what you're saying, Chris?
It's Monday. You having a bad day, Chris?
Be nice to him.
So, insurance company, a situation arose where insurance companies paid dividends to its parent company, if you will. And there's a dividend, under current law, there's a dividend deduction. And there was a court case that... ruled there was an audit and the taxpayer objected to the audit and went to the court, and the court made some decisions, I believe, in favor of DOR, but it had something to do with the dividend deduction. And I should probably stop there. You have advocates here.
Yes.
I'm just now catching up to speed on this one.
Okay. Robert Manicki is here with the Sander team. You want to bring anybody else up, Bob?
Jeff Anderson from Department of Revenue, too.
Awesome. Is this like friendly fire, then?
Good morning, Chair Haas, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Robert Manicki. I'm at Stoll Reeves here representing Standard Insurance. And this is a corporation excise tax issue, and Chris Allenack's description. Actually, the prevailing party in the court case was Standard, and the court case left some issues unresolved. And today, after three attempts, we're now... ready almost with some amendments to Senate Bill 153 that would fill gaps left in the law after the resolution of that court case. The first attempt was made with the Department of Revenue's bill, Senate Bill 31. The second attempt was an idea by Standard that is in Senate Bill 153 as introduced. And at this moment, the department and Standard and industry are very, very close to agreeing upon some amendments to Senate Bill 153 that would replace completely the text of the as introduced version that you have before you. This would be the third way that would resolve the issue. If you like, I can go into more depth as to what the issues are and how the amendments would resolve them. I leave that to you, and perhaps Jeff has something to add.
Mr. Anderson.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jeff Henderson, Department of Revenue. In full agreement with Robert's statements that working on very close on having amendments that would answer the unanswered question, I guess, left over from that litigation. And so the department is neutral to the bill, but is absolutely agrees that these amendments would answer, provide guidance to both industry taxpayers and the department. And we're very close on having amendments.
Okay, and we don't have any of those out here or proposals. We have, I see the dash ones. Is that what we're talking about?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the dash one amendments are in process. We still need a couple of days to work through questions that arose over the course of the weekend.
We have the dash ones on 153 on the OLA system.
What do they need, the dash twos?
Yeah, so you have another round coming?
That's correct, Senator.
Okay. That's
what question, Mr. Chair.
Senator Boquist.
Would the Department of Revenue, because I don't want a long legal answer, no disrespect, just briefly outline the differences and what are the issues remaining, just briefly?
You bet, Mr. Chair.
In English.
Mr. Sure. Vice Chair, sure. So the question really Thank is, insurers have, it's kind of unique for Oregon, they have a separate filing requirement. So when they're included in this return, combined return with other affiliates, and they're doing business in Oregon, they need to file separately. And so the issue that's kind of unanswered is how that income of that insurer is stripped from that consolidated group. Okay. And these amendments speak to that and provide clarity.
So basically a breakout of a unitary return for related insurance.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Other questions? Okay, we'll look forward to that technical change and get the dash twos in here as soon as they arrive and send this over to the House.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Thank you. Close the hearing on Senate Bill 153. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 535. Kyle.
Okay, good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 535. It would require the offer of just compensation for condemned property. If the property is subject to taxation, it would not the offer would not be less than the most recent real market value. That's determined for the property by the county assessor or the Department of Revenue for taxation purposes. In the cases of the condemner, if they're seeking a portion of the property to be condemned, the offer of just compensation may not be less than the portion of the property by the area of the property as that relates to the real market value of the property as it was on the last tax assessment roll. It does declare an emergency and would be effective on passage.
Okay. We also on this bill, since it's hitting radars for the first time, need a little. Can you discern what the problem is here that is that this bill seeks to resolve?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I can try to give a little background. And just in terms of the bill itself, it looks like the way it was written, Senate Bill 535. There's a quite a bit of bolded language there. The change itself is just related to the real market value and using. The value that the tax assessor has on the roll. So when property's being condemned, so maybe there's some use by the government, so they're going to need to condemn this property or something to that effect, it would require that you would have to give at least the value that's on the roll. So if there's an appraisal done of the property and it's greater than that amount, then they could use a value higher, but that value would set, in essence, a minimum, so long as the property is subject to taxation. So you have a value to which to relate to.
Okay. We have a couple of people signed up to testify. I'll just call Dean Worth, Dave Honeycutt, Mike Goucher. You guys want to come up together?
Chairman Hawson, committee. Senate Bill 535 arose from a discussion by Oregonians in Action board members seeking to improve Oregon. The objective is to save the time.
Sir, could you start off with your identification, please?
My name? My name is Dean Worth, W-E-R-T-H.
Thank you.
The objective is to save the time and money currently expended by the state in obtaining commercial appraisals used in acquiring private land for public purposes. Our Oregon property tax system is by law required to be dependent upon the creation and use of a fair real market value. Real market value is defined as the value agreed upon by informed and willing buyers and sellers. A situation which does not exist for either taxation or taking for public purposes. Instead, licensed professionals using standard methodologies determine a value. Both commercial and taxing authorities are using equally qualified professionals, but the taxing authority has broad public responsibility. The professional creates a singular opinion. Every property owner receives a yearly statement of their real market value and have tacitly accepted such if they have not appealed. Senate Bill 535 creates a quicker, less costly process whereby the acquiring state entity starts negotiating with a proper owner at the publicly available real market value, already required by law to be fair. It simplifies, economizes, and is equitable. There often are other considerations involved, such as partial taking or access. Negotiations on such special matters are not affected by this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action here in support of Senate Bill 535. As the committee knows, both the federal and the state constitutions have takings clauses that give the state, county, federal government eminent domain authority to take land from private property owners. That's a needed part of the Constitution, and we certainly don't object to that. It happens with a fair amount of frequency, a little more than we'd hope, but it is what it is. The problem with condemnation authority as it's exercised is it's typically a David versus Goliath battle. You have a property owner who is going along owning their private property, has no intention to sell it, only to get notice from a governing body that they're going to take some of their land and force a sale. The standard for takings law is easily met. There are two requirements for a governing body when they take property. They have to pay just compensation, and there has to be a public use for the property. They need to demonstrate that there's some kind of public purpose for taking the property. That's an easy standard to meet. It's been fleshed out repeatedly by the state and federal courts. And the just compensation piece is why we're here. We think that 535 will encourage settlement. That's the goal. It's to tie the real market value, which is established by the county assessor, and which by statute, and the statute is ORS 308-205, requires the real market value to be based on the fair market value. A fair market value determination is based on what a willing buyer and a willing seller would agree to in an arm's length transaction. That is, for purposes of the calculation of the real market value by the county tax assessor, that our tax appraiser, that is the standard for real market value. That also happens to be the standard for a taking. So if there's a condemnation, when the government appraises the property and decides on the value of the taking, the value is supposed to be based on fair market value, which again is the same arm's length transaction. So what this bill would do would be to tie that real market value in with the appraisal. And the goal here is to encourage settlement. Again, it's a difficult situation that a property owner finds themselves in when their property is subject to condemnation. Under this bill, you would get both the appraisal and you would know what your real market value is. If the appraisal is lower than the real market value, then under this bill, the governing body would offer you the real market value and not what the appraisal would be. The fact that you would see both the appraisal and the real market value as the property owner would let you know that the offer being made is higher than what the appraisal is, and presumably then would encourage a settlement. There would be no reason then for the property owner to object. And these fights, when there are fights, and most of the cases settle, but when there are fights, the fights typically occur over money. If you saw that the appraisal was lower than the real market value, that indicates one of two things. Number one, it indicates that you ought to take the offer, which of course then would cut costs for everybody. It would cut litigation and costs. And number two, if the real market value is higher than the appraisal, one of the two is right and the other one is wrong. If you believe the appraisal is right, then assuming that the real market value is used to calculate your property taxes instead of the maximum assessed value, you're paying too much in property taxes. So you get two indications as a result of that situation. On the alternative, if the appraisal was higher than the real market value, then under this bill, it wouldn't kick in. But again, you would get, you in that situation, you would get the appraised, the offer for the take would be equal to the appraisal. And again, you would be able to, it would encourage settlement because you would see the that the appraisal is higher than the real market value, and the chances of you improving on that if you go all the way through the court system and spend money on lawyers and appraisers is probably not high. So we think this bill, by tying in the real market value to the taking value, we think that this bill will discourage litigation and make it fairer, more fair for the property owner, and increase settlement. So we like this bill a lot, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for giving this a hearing, and we're very much supportive of the bill.
Thank you, Dave.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mike Gugler. I'm a developer, land developer, and a builder, both commercial and residential properties. My position's given me the opportunity to be on both sides, both where I have to appeal what I consider to be an inappropriate valuation by the county assessor, appraiser, and also to have to deal with private appraisers in proving that particular piece of property that I'm building, owning, developing is worth what it needs to be in order to qualify for a loan. The difficulty that I have as a land owner is that if my property is subject to condemnation, I don't know what what it's going to be valued at until the condemning authority has sent an appraiser to the property, and we subsequently get and by this point we're well down the road. Our property is subject to being taken, and we know that long before we know what it's going to be valued by the condemning authority. Then we're notified, you're entitled to X, but we say, but wait a minute, it's worth more than that. But once the property is clouded with condemnation, there's no selling it. Effectively, the real market value is what the condemning authority determines it's worth, because you're not going to be able to sell, hey, I've got a piece of property for you, it's a great deal, it's just subject to condemnation. So it's been discounted and it's not fungible anymore. With the county, every year I get an assessment and an appraisal, and I have an opportunity, and I have taken that opportunity to appeal that particular judgment. And when I do so, I also have to provide comps, like-kind transactions, to justify the position that I'm taking with regard to the value of that property. This proposed law would make it much easier for both the developer, the landowner, and the condemning authority to understand what needs to be done to make a fair, equitable transaction.
Thank you. It seems like, correct me if I'm wrong, most of the time that a new appraisal would be higher than what's on the rolls as the market value. No? Am I wrong about that?
It's not been my experience. My experience is that we will have on the county roster. You understand there are different incentives. You can't go to the county assessor and say, oh, by the way, our property is subject to condemnation, so it should be done valued less. So we have I have a difficulty where a number of times, in fact, most of the time, the county assessment is higher than what the first offer is from the condemning authority. They will come in and you'll end up negotiating. And and keep in mind, once the property is subject to condemnation, you no longer have, it's like taking a knife to a gunfight. You no longer have use of your property. If you don't reach an agreement, it doesn't matter. They take the property and they do whatever they want with it, and you wait until it's finally resolved in the courts to get paid if you choose to keep fighting for it. But you're completely without resources equal to usually the resources of the condemning authority.
I would point out, Mr. Chair, in that situation where the appraised where the appraisal comes in higher than the real market value under the terms of this bill, then you would the condemning authority would offer you the appraised value. This bill kicks in only in situations where the real market value is higher than the appraised value. In that situation, then they offer you the real market value as opposed to the appraised value.
That's right. And for Chigger? Or Boquist?
No, I got it.
Got it.
I'm waiting for the appraisers to come up.
Uh-oh. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Tom Rolfing, Aaron Doyle.
Morning, Chair Hess, members of the committee. I'm Tom Rolfing, Marion County Assessor. Today I'm here to represent the Oregon State Association of County Assessors, OSACA. At this time, OSACA has chosen to oppose Senate Bill 535. I understand assessors' value estimates are considered for many, many purposes, and that's reasonable. I would recommend to any property owner to look at a variety of sources of information when considering a transaction. However, there's various purposes for appraisals, and our appraisers value property for ad valorem property taxation. Let me give you some examples for perspective here. Question came to mind, have you ever seen a fence you thought was worth $1 million? And in my mind, I haven't. But I have seen it in our data. So we're dealing with mass appraisal at the counties, and there's potential for mistakes, right? When you have 22 appraisers valuing 130,000 tax accounts, trying to keep all that straight. So we're not looking at individual appraisals each year of properties. And our estimate of real market value, that's an opinion, just like an opinion from a fee appraiser. But a fee appraiser looking at appraising a property for a transaction is looking at that property for that transaction for that purpose. Let me give you a little mathematical example of why you might not want to look at assessment data for a transaction. I threw in some numbers here, some actually realistic numbers. $20,000 for a maximum assessed value on a property might be the value that a property is assessed at. The assessor may estimate the real market value at $500,000. However, the property owner's opinion of the value of the property might only be $100,000. The property may have changed, right? Since the assessor might be looking at different data. The property may have changed since the assessor had looked at it in the past, for a lot of reasons. In this case, the assessed value is so low, the property owner's not going to come complain to the assessor to look at it, right? And if they did want to appeal the real market value, our estimate of real market value, the courts aren't going to hear it because they're not aggrieved, right? There's no tax relief if they were to win in that case. So appraisals are supposed to have certain information and meet certain criteria. Every appraisal is supposed to have a purpose. It's supposed to have a date of the valuation and should follow the uniform standards of professional appraisal practice, USPAP. So the purpose, our appraisers look at properties for property taxation, not for an individual transaction. They may not have looked at the property for a long time. The date of the appraisal, an appraisal may have been done 10 years ago, but the value may have been adjusted for the prior January 1st, which is usually at least a year away from when you'd be looking at the condemnation. And the USPAP standards are different for mass appraisal than they are for a fee appraisal. There's also the issue of licensing. Our appraisers aren't licensed to appraise properties for a transaction. They're registered appraisers through the Department of Revenue. So assessors oppose this bill because the purpose of our appraisals are different. Not every property is inspected each year. The valuation dates of the appraisals are often different. Assessors' real market values are determined from mass appraisal models and statistical analysis. And some counties are adjusting real market value based on annual statistical trending data that could be more than 10 years old. Our values don't represent the property before the condemnation and after the condemnation. Assessors should not be estimating values for condemnation or defending those values. We really don't want to be caught in the middle of something else other than doing our primary task. It would be reasonable to look at assessed values, and I'm sure people do today, to come up with their estimate of maybe the minimum price. When it comes to a partial taking, depends on the property and the location, depends on a lot of things. But oftentimes you could have a residential property that might be 10,000 square feet of land, and it could be reduced a couple hundred square feet. And the biggest determination of value could be where that prized rose bush was or the tree, which we're not valuing in our mass appraisal. We don't get to that level of detail. A 9,500 square foot lot is usually still typically buildable. Right, so we look at buildable parcels. We don't adjust our values to that kind of detail, or to the feelings of the buyers. So, respectfully, I ask that you not move this bill forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Boltwitz.
No, I'll let her testify first, then I'll come back to him. Okay. I don't want her to get scared off when I start asking questions.
Good morning, Chair Hass, members of the committee. For the record, Aaron Doyle here on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities. We are very concerned with the consequences that Senate Bill 535 would have for us in our condemnation processes. I won't go into the detail, and mostly because I don't want to answer the questions, but assessors are not appraisers. And the appraisal process is pretty clearly laid out in the Uniform Standards of Professional Appraisal Practice, which has been around since approximately 1987 and is currently about 72 pages long of information. I didn't read any of it. But when it comes time to do a condemnation, we need to know the actual value of the actual property on the ground, and appraisers are the tax assessor's offices aren't necessarily doing that sort of real-time data. It's probably not something that's within their capacity to do. But we still have to get the appraisal regardless of whether or not we were using the real market value under the structure of this bill. So this doesn't save us the time and money that of this for the state or any other condemner used to procure appraisals, because we'd still have to get the appraisals. And then we'd have to look at what the data said and then pay the higher of the two prices. In addition, just to be brief, the issue of the partial taking does not necessarily reflect the actual value of the land that is being partially the piece of the property that's being taken. There's could be very wide differences between the value of the strip in the middle versus the strip at the edge. If you're taking out the total usable land in the property, that's a very different story than taking the 100 square feet around the edge to create that right of way or other reasons for taking that have to have a public purpose. And that's the other key to the condemnation process, I think, that's been overlooked here. The reason why we do a condemnation and execute that power, which we've been provided, is that we're doing it for a public purpose. There's a reason that needs to meet the greater good. And so we're required to create just compensation. And the real-time appraisal process is the best way, the most efficient way, the most accurate way to determine what that real market value is and to find that just compensation process. But we're without losing that public purpose that we're doing the condemnation for. So using perhaps outdated or just statistically updated real market value might lead us into consistently paying well over what the normal market would have paid for that piece of property, which puts our budgets, your budgets, county budgets all at question. So I'm happy to try to answer any questions, but you have an expert here.
Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colleagues, actually, my question is now much wider than 535, because we've been discussing various property tax reforms and going to real market value, and I'm actually stunned what I've heard, but I guess let me just get clarified, if you would. Tom, you mentioned you guys have 130,000 accounts. How many appeals are there a year?
I think we had 48 appeals that actually went to the Board of Property Tax Appeals this year. I don't know how many reviews we had prior to that, but people call in and request a review, and we work it out with them, right? Try to explain our values. If that is not successful, then they file to BOPTA, Board of Property Tax Appeals.
Oh, I'm not sure.
Hello.
So 48 of the appeals you've had, or call-ins, or disagreements, or formal processes. How many of those are you generally wrong? Where you're how many of those end up in the property value being lowered out of those 48?
A lot of those have legitimate questions, concerns, information we didn't know about.
So roughly, I don't know, 1/100 of 1%. It was 130,048. I don't have my mathematics there, but not very many of them. Not very many times.
Right. There's not a lot of appeal.
Right. I mean, I'm almost stunned here, because we've been talking real market value here, and some of the testimony, your testimony and the other written testimony that's in here from the assessors, you know, there seems to be a difference between just taxation and just compensation. And I'm trying to figure this out, because what I heard in layman terms is not what I think of you assessors. I mean, I think you guys are pretty good. I think you're pretty professional. I think if you're registered with the Department of Revenue and you do this work, you guys do great work. And I think most of the time, as you've just pointed out by your appeal process and my experience, I mean, you're pretty doggone accurate. But I want you, just for the record, to know what I think I heard and what I see in this testimony. You've been ripping off the taxpayers for years because, you know, you do shoddy work. And you have a double standard that it's good enough for taxation, but it's not good enough for the public. And I'm actually just flat stunned compared to what I hear here. And so when we start talking about property tax, I mean, I think the simplest thing is if we move to a real market value, and we've talked about that, and I've been involved in serious reform and, you know, sticking my posterior out here, even with the chair, and saying, hey, we need to do some stuff. The counties have been asking for it. The cities have been asking for it. Or what I'm hearing is that the assessors cannot actually do good enough work to determine the real market value. That's what I'm hearing, which really has almost nothing to do with this bill. But am I correct, or you guys think you actually can?
Chair Hass, Senator Boquist, I do have confidence that our information is very good. Is very good. But there are opportunities to have errors in our data. And there is an appeal process if our valuation is wrong. And this statute would not allow for that process. So it's only the outliers that I think that would be an issue. And we worked very hard to have our data just as absolutely good as it can be. And there are differences between assessors' offices where some counties might only be dealing with a handful of sales, and I mean literally a handful of sales, less than a dozen maybe in a year. And other counties, such as Marion, is more rich with data. So we can do a better statistical job of getting to real market value, and some counties have the ability to get out there and visit these properties in person more often than others, and we've been working really hard to get back onto a regular cycle like we were required to under Measure 5 before Measure 50. Some counties haven't. There's differences. I can't speak to other counties' data, but I do look at our data if I'm looking at the value of a property, right? I go to our data first because that's what I know and I understand, but I still verify it, right? I still verify it. If I were to make a purchase, I would still look and make sure that our record was correct. We were looking at the correct data, and
Senator Riley, did you have a question?
Two questions, if I may. First, how often do you actually assess property? Appraise property.
Chair Haas, Senator Riley, I think are you getting at how often we actually inspect a property?
Yes.
We are working towards a 7-year appraisal cycle at Marion County. Some counties that cycle might be more like 15 or 20 years right now, right? We've had Measure 50 for 20 years, I believe, so since 98. It varies.
Somewhere in the range of 7 to 20 years.
I would say so. Actually, I think there's a couple of counties that are more like on a 6-year cycle. So.
Okay. The other question is, when there's a condemnation, do you reappraise?
When the property changes, we reappraise. When a sale comes through, we look at it and we consider it and we reappraise. A condemnation would generally either change the ownership either fully into government hands, which would mean we would exempt it, or it would change the description of the property, right? The perimeter of the property, the size of the property, and we would reappraise it.
But if it's exempted, you wouldn't appraise it, so that they wouldn't have a new appraisal.
We would still put a new estimate of real market value on it. Okay. But it would be exempt.
That was my question. Right. Thank you,
Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure on the record, I have a lot more faith in our assessors than they apparently have in themselves.
Yeah.
Because if the law is good enough for taxation, then the law is good enough for the other statutes. I'm just stunned we've spent so long talking about reform and suddenly, okay, we want our cake, but we want to eat it too, and we want a double standard, and that's not what government is about. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Once again, another indirect vote for our property tax reform. Sounds good. Thank you both. Mark Garst.
Yeah.
Chair Hass, members of the committee, Mark Garst with the Department of Revenue Property Tax Division. So actually, Tom spoke to quite a bit of what it was that I wanted to talk about, but I think I will go ahead and address Senator Boquist's concerns. I, too, have a high degree of I believe that our values are reliable, and I think it's very important that they be reliable. But I would just note that our system is a bit of a it's better at correcting in one direction than the other. So you're obviously going to come in and say something if your value is too high. If you're paying too many taxes, you're less likely to come in and talk to us if your value is too low. And then, you know, similar to that, I think that Tom really touched on the issue with maximum assessed value. So it could be that your maximum assessed value is absolutely correct. You're paying just what it is that you're supposed to pay, but your real market value is too high or too low. And so this bill would have the effect of, it doesn't look to maximum assessed value, it looks to the real market value, which maybe people aren't paying as much attention to as they might otherwise. in this committee and in others, I think that assessors have acknowledged a little bit that they tend to focus their resources where they're best used. And so they're not going to spend as much time valuing the real market value on specially assessed properties, say, exempt properties, and those properties might still be undergoing condemnation. And so we may have an issue where the real market value is not accurate because the assessor is more focused on what the specially assessed value is. And so I think that that is something that could get us into a bit of trouble under this bill.
Mr. Chair. Senator Riley. So didn't I just hear him say that when the property changes, they do a reevaluation?
Sure. If you were to come out of, I'm sorry, Chair Hass, Senator Riley, if you were to come out of special assessment, for example, your property would be revalued to reset.
Talking
your...
Talking about a condemnation.
Well, the bill as it's written would...
I'm not talking about the bill. I'm talking about now.
Would a property necessarily be revalued when it was...
When it changes hands.
I don't know how it would be revalued necessarily. I mean, it... I mean, obviously, they're going to reduce the value, possibly for the square footage that's been lost. They might do it that way, or they might take a bigger stab at it and do more of a reappraisal if it, you know, if they felt like there was a more important issue. But the point is, to me, is that this is a bit of a single-edged sword, that you're really only going to utilize this bill if your, you know, RMV is too high, arguably. And so the only result that could really happen is that we'll end up paying more than we should on property that we condemn. And so I find that to be a bit concerning. We do mass appraisals. And so if your property in particular had a lot of nice features, you would certainly not take the value. If it was just an average neighborhood value, say, you would not take the value that the assessor had come up with. If your property had a lot of deferred maintenance and you were actually worth less than your neighbors, you would jump right on that and you would absolutely take that value. And so the only result would be that we would, you know, pay too much for the condemned property. Similarly, these appraisals are as of January 1. Stuff may have happened to your property since the time that value was established. If whatever had happened had hurt the value of your property, you would jump right on this real market value and you would take it. And again, we would just end up spending too much money for the property that we need to do the road or whatever it is that we do. Finally, the partial taking language in the bill is a bit concerning. It just says that may not be less than the percentage of the real market value that's calculated by dividing the area of the property to be condemned by the area for which the real market value was determined. So if let's say that we were condemning a drainage swale along the edge of your property that they want to use for drainage for the highway. So if the assessor had just set a flat value on all your acres and just said your farm is worth 10 an acre, that would be more or less accurate maybe. But if the assessor had... But if the assessor had not done that, if they had just done a flat value for the entire property, then you would have an issue. If they had broken it out and said the wet areas of your farm are worth $1,500 an acre and the dry areas of your farm are worth $1,200 an acre, then you'd be okay to use that dollars per area. But if the assessor had just set a flat value and we're only taking the low value land, again, we would be in that situation where we would be paying too much. And presumably, if it were the reverse, you just simply wouldn't accept it. So again, it's just a single-edged sword, and it can only result, in my opinion, in probably paying too much. And if you are paying too many taxes, if that is the point of this, then come and talk to your assessor and appeal, and you know, and you need to get that reduced because nobody should be paying more than their fair share. That's what I have for you.
Senator Taylor?
No, not me, Bolquist.
Senator Bolquist?
Actually, I think it's a double-edged sword because, you know, the taxpayer expects everything to be fair on both sides of the sword. But let me ask you more, a couple questions and follow up so I can understand. Following up on the line of reasoning from Senator Riley, if a local government is condemning a right-of-way, we'll just pick a county government. It's farmland, so therefore it's on ag deferral, and the government condemns it and takes it. When it is reassessed, now, if there were a private sale or it was brought out of the private side, you'd have to pay, I think it's 7 years back, taxes on that when it comes out. When you're saying reassessment, would that property at the county or the state be reassessed and the government entity, the county in this case, would they have to pay the 7 years back taxes on that to get it transferred over to them, or would it the government just not pay anything?
Chair Haas, Senator Bolquist, I'm quite certain that the government would not pay the back taxes on that. I imagine. I can't exactly see the statute in my mind, but
right, I think you're
yeah,
correct.
I think that's right.
You're correct. Now, if it's private, they've got to pay 7 years back taxes. But there are a couple examples in here, and it seems logical. I mean, just common law. I mean, if you lose something and it loses value, it's not going to be worth as much when you assess it. So do you think I'm right? If I had a $10,000 car with no insurance and I wrecked it, and it was now only worth $3,000, would I get $10,000 for it when I sold it, or would I get $3,000 for it?
Chair Haas, Senator Bolquist, I mean, you would get $3,000 for it.
That's right.
Right.
And so when some property owner, I don't care who it is, you know, they come in and say, we're going to condemn your land, it is now magically worth a lot less just because the government said they're going to condemn it. You would agree with that?
Chair Haas, Senator Bolquist, I absolutely do not agree with that. I mean, if you're putting a major road through and now the land on both sides is going to be suitable for commercial, maybe, it could really enhance the value of the land. And I don't think that I'm not ODOT, obviously, and I don't think that ODOT's even allowed to look at that when they do the condemnation. I think they just have to give you what it was worth, irrespective of the fact that there was a condemnation occurring.
Right.
But
I hate for the record to tell you, we have what's called land use planning. You'll get to make those choices. Plan owner gets screwed. Now, we're either going to be fair or we're not going to be fair. It's that simple. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Mark, I appreciate your comment.
Thank you.
The taxes should be fair, especially when it comes to property taxes. And to the extent that this is a problem in our system, it is way below the much bigger problem of the tale of two houses that we've been trying to grapple with for a couple of years here. So no question there. Just
Chair Haas, I mean I agree completely. I'm one of the winners and losers on the tale of two houses. You know, I happen to have one of the winners in Southeast Portland, and I understand that it's not really fair to have people east of 82nd Avenue subsidizing my near and southeast lifestyle. It's kind of,
appreciate that. Okay, thank you, Mark. Courtney Lords.
Good morning, Chair Haas, members of the committee. I am Courtney Lords. I'm an attorney with Multnomah County Attorney's Office. I'm also here today on behalf of the Association of Oregon Counties, who could not be here. And we are very adamantly opposed to this bill. And let me explain to you why, some of which has been touched on by testimony also. But I want to actually drill down into the details a little bit more than what we've talked about. The reason being is, as the condemnation attorney for Multnomah County, the devil really is in the details. So the problem that I see and the Association of Oregon County sees with SB 535 is that it oversimplifies what happens in the appraisal process. So, for instance, when a county such as Multnomah County identifies property that needs to be taken, whether it be a whole parcel, a portion for something such as right-of-way or a drainage easement, we always, regardless of the value of what we think that's going to be, get an independent appraisal. And the reason for that being is even though ORS 35346 gives us the option, if a property taking is less than $20,000, to avoid getting an appraisal and to just provide written documentation, we go through that process for a couple of reasons. One, in our experience, we feel it actually benefits the property owner. Why do we want to benefit the property owner? Because we want to be transparent and we want to encourage negotiation as much as we can. So if we start out by saying we have an independent appraisal, this is what your property is looking like it's valued at, we think it puts us in a better place and hopefully it makes that property owner feel a lot better when the government has to come in and say, sorry, we're taking a portion of your property. The other piece of this that I think is so important is the county assessor's valuation is really a 30,000-foot valuation at a point in time for what that real market value is. As we all know, living in Oregon in the last few years, property values change almost overnight in certain areas, it seems like. Other areas, not so much. So I think the most important thing about the real market value that we see from an assessor is it's just that snapshot in time. Anytime we actually want to look at property's value for a taking, we think it benefits the property owner and the county to go out and have that appraiser. And why? Because the appraiser visits the property owner at or near the time of condemnation. The assessor likely hasn't been on the property, or if they have, it's been a long time because most of what they are doing is real-time data when they make their adjustments to real market value. The other portion that is so important of an appraiser is they take note of any special conditions or abnormalities on a property, which in most cases, the real market value by the county assessor is not going to drill down into those details and will not have those. So when I say special conditions, I talk about things like wetlands, any kind of environmental contamination, inability to develop, those certain things, which all affect the value of a property. The other thing is an appraiser looks at recent comparable sales as a guide. And again, that speaks to the where we are in time. So if we are looking at condemnation of a property that actually hasn't been updated in the last 3 or 4 years by the assessor, then chances are that assessor value is not going to fairly compensate that property owner for the value of the taking. And finally, an appraiser looks at the actual market conditions on a property. And again, that's real time versus the snapshot that we see. So in Multnomah County's experience and other member counties of the Association of Oregon Counties, a property owner most often receives greater compensation for a property taking when the property is appraised by an independent appraiser. So we don't want to lose the ability to do that and the requirement that that happen. The other problem that we see with SB 535 is its look at the partial takings. We've heard a little bit today about the partial takings, and I think what happens is we tend to think if a property is a parcel at 100% and we're taking a tenth of that, we're just going to give it a tenth of the real market value assessment and call that good. Again, in our experience, that's not the case. So I'm going to give you an example. And just for simplicity, I'm going to come up with easy numbers here. But let's say, for instance, that there's a 10,000 square foot property and a condemning entity is looking at taking 1,000 square feet of that for a drainage easement. Now, if we are looking at 1,000 square feet that, say, is right in the middle of a productive berry patch, an appraiser is going to come up with a very different value for that 1,000 square feet in the middle of this productive berry patch than if it was 1,000 square feet on the edge of the property that was a wetlands that had been determined undevelopable. So I want to draw distinctions there that it's not all one size fit all when we're talking about the partial takings because they are very complicated. And in Multnomah County's experience, those are the most complicated. It's easier when you're dealing with one whole property because you don't have to look at what's the remainder to the effect of the other property. And that's where I think our independent appraisals are so important, is that we have certified appraisers who know how to value those properties, which our internal staff, whether it's an assessor or not don't necessarily have that experience. There are a few things that I just wanted to touch on that I heard others speak to today. And one is that the proposed changes in 535 actually will save time and money by the condemners when taking the property. Again, we disagree mainly from the Multnomah County perspective, because what we have found is if we do this legwork, which my client will sometimes even argue, Courtney, why are we going out and spending $2,000 on appraisal for a property that's been valued at $800 for our taking? And you might say, economically, that doesn't make sense. The reason we do that is it gives the property owner a lot more confidence, and it gives Multnomah County and the Board of Multnomah County confidence that we are fairly and justly compensating that property owner. And what we have found is by doing that, it saves us time and money in the long run, because we're not going back and forth and having to fight over this. We've already made a point to the property owner that we have done our due diligence. There was also a comment that the current system kind of creates a David versus Goliath and condemnation. There's always going to be that that perception, because it is a government right to come in and take property when it's needed for public purpose. But in Multnomah County's opinion, 535 perpetuates that, because again, the real market value says, here's what we see without going out getting a real-time value, and we want to give you this based on that. So I think it actually undermines or actually enhances the David versus Goliath mentality. The other thing that I think is important to understand is the assessor real market value is not the same as fair market value. And the reason I say that is, again, it's that snapshot. When we're talking about fair market value, we're talking about right now what's the value. And the value when we go out and have these appraised is, what is the value of this property prior to the taking? And that is what the assessor looks at. And that's how they come back, or excuse me, the appraiser looks at. And that's when they come back and say, this is what the property was valued at prior to the government action. After the government action, here's what the property is valued at. So the argument that once a property is condemned, there's no value and it lowers the appraisal value, I disagree with that entirely based on what I have seen in my practice. So I thank you for your time today, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. I appreciate your analogy with the berry patch. Seems like almost all of these property tax issues get us into the briar patch. questions of Courtney Ward? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Finally, last on our list here is Paul Mather.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Paul Mather, Highway Division Administrator. Just offer a few perspectives from the Highway or ODOT's point of view on this issue. Most of the things I was going to bring up have been covered quite well in the previous testimony. When we acquire property for highway purposes, almost all of our projects of the expansion type are federal funds. The federal Uniform Code requires us to use appraised value that we need to go out and hire an independent appraisal, and the process has been described to determine the real value at the moment in time that we are taking possession of the property. The assessed value, as has been talked about, is often can lag back several times, and it uses a process that's more general in its determination of the value. Most of our acquisitions are portions of property, and so the percentage piece in this bill, we're again get that appraised value on the very specific slice or sliver or piece of the property that we are acquiring as part of our project. So again, we follow the federal uniform code. If there was a difference in the price of the property and the if this bill were to pass and the appraised value was the higher of the amount, we'd have to use state funds to fill that gap between what the appraised value and an independent appraisal was and the assessed value. Thank you.
Questions for Mr. Madden?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have no one else signed up to testify on this, so I'm going to close the hearing on SB 535. That clears out our agenda today. Dr. Warner? We have nothing there, so we will adjourn until 8:30 tomorrow morning.